TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Natural Process Farming is the title Bob Canard chose for the workshop that he gave at the first National Heirloom Seed Expo in Santa Rosa, California in September 2011. But what this piano player, great cook, and incredible farmer, in the words of the pioneers, actually says and does is much more complex. He and other farmers who are snatching old wisdom, heirloom seeds, and farmland from the edge of destruction often have a worldview in which farming and gardening is so much more than getting your hands in the ground. Bob Canard writes, "In the structure of nature, you have an economy of generosity. There's plenty for all organisms. Why, in our culture, do we not recognize the foundation of nature and its steady-state opportunities? Why, in our culture, have we generated and sustained this economy of scarcity, an economy that pits some with much against many with very little? It's a perversion, and if we are to overcome this perversion, we need to start growing food to completeness." Canard says that he wants to bite into a tomato from a well-grown plant and suck some of its juice and feel the energy of that tomato in his blood just as well as if he were drinking wine. The lands that Bob Canard tends are in Northern California. Greenstring Farm is near Petaluma. All that is grown at the farm is available at reasonable prices at the farm store, open daily, year-round. His produce was also chosen to be served at the most expensive Bay Area restaurants. At my first visit to Greenstring Farm, I got a mini tour by one of the interns. Stepping through the back of the farm store, you see a gently undulating 40-acre ocean of green, an unusual sight in summertime California when all wild grasses turn golden. At closer look, there's some texture in the green cover, and you discern neatly planted rows of leeks and onion, broccoli or zucchini. And the green that surrounds these rows of produce is made up of a variety of plants in various stages of their lives. Barley, clover, some dark red seed heads of amaranth, and much more. That's Bob Canard's famous cover crop, and this is one of his main methods of soil building. The intern saw my surprise and said, "We mow them when they get taller than the broccoli." All the years spent helping my grandmother weed the garden and all the decades of farmers pouring Roundup on living plants and all the millions of dollars earned by the ag industry in chemical and mechanical weed suppression flash by in a second, maybe not even necessary. And the leeks before me, growing in a carpet of weeds, will taste so exquisite that a restaurant can charge $40 for the dish prepared with them. Even the educated audience of the Heirloom Seed Expo in Santa Rosa at Bob Canard's workshop had to stretch a little. Most farmers would agree that cover crops are a wonderful way of improving soils, but then they get plowed under before they reach maturity. Canard calls that infanticide. A woman in the audience asked incredulously, "You are letting the cover crops go to seed?"
"Full maturity. Die of their own volition.
Then you have all the seeds."
"That's beautiful. Seeds are good food resources. Worms will eat seeds. Biology will eat seeds." "No, seeds are absolutely wonderful. Weeds are absolutely wonderful. Weeds in my gardens are predominant cover crops. Amaranthus, beautiful cover crop. Tremendous proteinaceous material. Perhaps you eat quinoa, it's related to the amaranthus plant. Perhaps you actually get amaranthus flour. You might be you might be gluten intolerant, and you might eat amaranthus seed flour as a protein resource. No, weed seeds are, we are too afraid of the structure of nature. Weed seeds are really super energy, food, storage entities, and they're incorporated in our soil. And yes, they're going to sprout and grow, and we have then competition. Well, we have to manage competition rather than dominate it. And it depends. Your garden is you and your little nurse space, your little earth space. And so you have to develop systems that are most appropriate for your spot. Like I grow zucchinis. I grow a diversified garden, but let's say I grow a little patch of zucchinis about as big as this room, 5,000 plants and less, 3,000 plants. And so I have a row of zucchinis that is clean cultivated, either mechanically by hand, about 6-inch row. And then they're planted 5 feet apart, so there's a space about 4 feet between the zucchini plants that all the weeds are allowed to grow in. And when those weeds finally get too competitive, then they're mowed. And it takes a lot less energy to mow and suppress something than to kill it. And zucchinis need to be picked every day, and they need to be kept highly moist. They need to be watered on a regular basis. So you can go out into one of my zucchini patches, turn the water sprinklers off, walk right in there. It's like walking on a lawn. Your feet are never muddy. You're not sloshing and damaging the soil. The roots are supporting the system, and it is a jiffy thing to mow between your zucchini plants. And if you don't cultivate too much, all of those surviving weeds, they're giving out phenolic compounds, all sorts of stuff that are telling the weed seeds in the soil not to germinate. So we all have to hand hoe, if whatever we do, we'll have to hoe those zucchini plants one time. That's it. And then no more weed seeds will come up. And then we have to mow it once, sometimes twice. And so we get a cycling of, mostly at this season, amaranthus and grasses as carbonaceous material back into the garden to support nature. And then the ground is all covered up with living plants, and there's no mud splashed onto the zucchini plant, so I don't have to. I pick a zucchini, I don't wash it. We picked 6 boxes, I think, this morning of zucchini blossoms, very delicious, the male blossom. And there, you can't wash zucchini blossoms, and zucchini blossoms are considered to be valuable and rare because almost everybody has clean cultivated zucchini fields, and then the blossoms are all filled with mud, and then you can't clean them, and so you're screwed. You can't use zucchini blossoms. Nobody can eat zucchini blossoms. They're dirty, you know, and then the system gives you, it's no longer a monoculture, but you have a polyculture. You're growing a cycle of diversified different kinds of plants, which I call weeds for nature, that are managed. They're not killed. And then you're growing a zucchini to support the human side.
That's Bob Canar at the first National Heirloom Seed Expo in Santa Rosa, California, in September 2011. He responded to questions, and many were from folks who are part of the growing front yard rebellion, eager to turn their lawns into a verdant vegetable garden.
Most of our soils are compacted, and they're hard to dig into. And does anybody have a lawn that they want to start turning into a garden? It's a possibility. And around here, a lawn is likely to be infected with a rather stoloniferous, difficult to manage plant known as Bermuda grass. Anybody know about that stuff? So we have to suppress the development of the Bermuda grass. Bermuda grass is a low-level life support plant. It can only grow under low levels of life support in the soil, low digestive forces, low nutrient holding and exchange, cycling capacity. So what I recommend for you to do to start your garden under compacted, bad backyard soil conditions, typical, is to develop a sheet compost. So now a sheet compost, we're going to take this piece of ground that we're interested in improving, and we're going to put a layer of nitrogenous material all over it, maybe 4 inches thick. That nitrogenous material could be alfalfa, or it could be a 4-inch thick layer of half-digested, organically grown cow manure, or your mushroom compost. That's any of those, any high-ish nitrogenous material, and it could be grass clippings. And it's going to be nitrogenous material. You identify it by when it rots down, it's stinky. So then on top of that layer of nitrogenous material, you need to overcome mineral deficiency. So get yourself some mineral resources like the raw igneous crushed rock. We sell that over at the Green String Farm store. Oyster shell, excellent stuff. There are other resources, raw crushed rock, pelletized material, they call it, azomite. I'm not sold on it, but it's better than nothing. Put a layer of that and oyster shell and maybe some gypsum, which has calcium sulfate, those two things, naturally mined rock. Sprinkle that all over the soil surface of the nitrogenous surface. And that will start bringing mineral nutrients, and the compost and the nitrogen is going to become food for all sorts of biology, right up to earthworms. And then on top of that, put another layer, a roof for it. Get some straw or some leaves, some dry carbonaceous material. So we have a roof, and we have mineral layer, and we have the food layer, the nitrogenous layer. And then go up into the mountains and do the little business of gathering some inoculum from nature. Find a rotted log and get a little tiny handful of compost from underneath the rotting log, and a little bit from many different resources, any place that's pure and clean. And you bring that home, put that one little baggie that you put in your back pocket into a 5-gallon bucket of water, and soak that in your watering in your bucket, and stir it about 10-15 minutes, and strain it into your sprinkler watering can, and sprinkle that all over it. Maybe go to the Sonoma Valley Worm Farm. I think they have a place here. And buy a few red worms and introduce them. They'll come at any rate, but introduce them. And keep it watered and bring additional food stock to it. Kitchen scrap tea is an excellent, very low cost nutrient resource potential. So you have kitchen scraps. You made dinner for all of the brats, you know? So then they didn't clean their plates and you had bones left over or whatever. All into your big stock pot, fill it up with water, not too much fat, not too much salt, just like us, and bring it to a good simmer and put the lid on it. I pick mine up and set it outside on the picnic table and wrap an old bath towel or burlap around it so it's insulated and it cooks and cools down slowly all night long. And now you have basic stock. If your children were starving, you could feed them the carrot peeling stock. Many an Irish child has been sustained off of potato peeling stock. The Lord got the potato, and the kids the child of the cook got the potato peelings, if they were lucky. And subsequently, in the morning, it'll settle, and all the solid sludge will be on the bottom, and up and above, you'll have all of this beautiful liquid broth that is all mineral. It's the best food that you ate and fed your own family. It's the scraps of the same thing. It's got all good stuff. If you put poor stuff into it, you're not going to get good stuff out of it, but you've done the best you can to feed the kids. You know, you gave them Cheerios with milk on it, and they didn't finish their bowl. Into the kitchen scrap thing. Cheerios aren't too good. They got sugar and crap in them. But nonetheless, you know, it's better than nothing. The kid was good enough for the kid. It's going to be good enough for the worm. So subsequently, that drain that watery part into your watering can and maybe dilute it and sprinkle that. That's excellent meat. That's just as good as going out and buying fish emulsion or some fertilizer, organic fertilizer, and didn't cost you anything except you had to do a little bit of work and you took a little bit of fuel to heat it up. You're going to put yours on top of the wood stove, and it's not going to cost anything. No extra BTUs to heat it. And then the sludge, study up and get a simple barrel worm composting system going. And the sludge goes, already cooked sludge, put that in for the worms. They'll just like go wild on that stuff. And so then you've taken this bigger amount of non-digested material and you've gotten an immediate nutritional resource from it that you've sprinkled on your garden plants or on this sheet compost, and keep the sheet compost moist. And maybe if it's really bad, put another layer of the same three things, nitrogenous right on top of the straw, put another layer on it. And usually within the course of 6 months, I used to teach at junior college for a small number of years, and we had a paved road, the old paved road that ran up through the middle of this place at the Los Willicos campus, which they got rid of. And every semester we would go out there and put a sheet compost on top of the old asphalt. And in two semesters more, these quarters at the school, we'd be ready to just dig right into it. You can go in, dig that. Those biology will dig that soil and all of your mineral nutrients and everything. You'll end up in over winter time, usually, you'll be ready to plant a late spring garden. And Bermuda grass, it'll be a thing of the past, with the exception, you probably have a driveway, it's your front yard, you have a driveway on one side, a sidewalk in the front, and the Bermuda grass roots are underneath there, and so you'll have to continue to do like a foot all the way around the edge to kill and starve off the Bermuda grass. The inside Bermuda grass, it can't tolerate fungal digestion. If it gets funguses on it, it's gone. And you're going to bring those fungal populations and yeast populations, bacterial populations. There's more life in a real soil than there is actual mechanical, physical structure of the rocks and the sands and the clays and so on and so forth. You have a stump in your front yard that you don't want to pay the money to have it ground out. So the guys just cut the tree, and then they're going to charge you another $2,000 to bring the stump grinder in and grind the stump. And, oh, don't do that. Save the tiny little branches from the tree, pile them on top of the stump, get yourself some high nitrogenous material like some fresh cow manure from the organic dairyman, and put that generously on top. So now you've got a little mound out there, and then get and put a little layer, a little kilt of straw on top of that, and a little layer of soil over the whole thing. And now you've got a little bit of pile compost with the inoculated, bring the earthworms and the biology, and it's all going to happen. And that stump will rot right out. So now you've got this little pile in your front yard, and that's kind of ugly. No problem. It has 6 inches of soil on it. Plant quick-growing, flowering plants and things like pumpkins or squashes or something like that, sunflowers. Any coarse feeder will grow just fine under those circumstances.
The last question Bob Kanar took before he closed with a really intriguing action item was about biochar. Folks are becoming curious about it because biochar is under investigation as a possible method of carbon sequestration, which would help mitigate climate change. Here's what Bob Kanar thinks about the uses of biochar in the soil.
Biochar is charcoal in the soil, and when the Portuguese and other groups like that came to the what's now Brazil, the Amazon floodplains, oh, we call that, it's a jungle down there, it's a rainforest. Well, it used to be old archaeologists did deny that, but there's a new crop of archaeologists that have studied the soil, and they've learned that there were millions of people that lived there, and that the Amazon was not a rainforest, but it was a highly diversified food farm, an arboreal food farm. And they maintained carbon in the soils by charcoaling the waste stream elements of dead trees and so on and so forth. And charcoal is generated by controlled oxygen burn. You make a pile of sticks or put it in your airtight wood heating stove and get the fire just going and cut off all of the air. Just let it slowly simmer and then open that door in a day or two and you'll have some charcoal. Charcoal is like stabilized carbon and has lots of little cracks and holes in it that is home for soil biology and a tremendous amount of surface area that has great interchange capacity for holding and exchanging nutrients. And is an excellent thing that's only very recently been discovered and introduced into the thought of being important. And you can actually buy charcoal from cogen plants burning rice hulls or something like that, and they'll give it to you for free if you happen to be over in Yolo County or something like that. It's a waste stream product, charcoal is an excellent stabilized carbonaceous resource. But lots of time, growing your own cover crop to maturity, stable, not as good as charcoal in some sense, but better in other senses, a more digestible actual food for the biology. The charcoal is just a home for the biology and a nutrient exchange advantages.
Would you add it to your compost?
Yes, it could go into the compost. It doesn't make any difference as long as it ends up in the soil. Other mineral resources you might, let's say that you live out in the woods and perhaps you heat your house with wood debris. And then you end up with wood ashes. As long as wood ashes are fine, as long as you use them very lightly over a wide surface area and not contaminate any local area, and that you burn good naturally occurring wood. You don't burn old Playboy magazines or something like that that has a lot of toxic compounds in it. Compounds. What's our time here? Yeah, we've got 7 minutes, so I want to ask you guys a few questions. Now, 100 years ago, 125 years ago, 90% of us lived in the country, and we were responsible for our own foodstuffs. And a typical homestead farm operation, wherever, whatever state it would be in, there would be diversity on that farm. And diversity means that you can utilize your energy, your resourceful energy of your own physicality, in balance within the structure of your farm and grow lots of different things. And in doing so, you would have a portion of your farm that was in pasture, probably about a third of it, half of it at least, because you had horse for motive plowing and working of the soil. And then a portion of the ground would be in a cash crop, something. And then the portion of the ground would be in a protein crop like corn or wheat or something like that. So you had some food to feed to the animals of your pig and chickens and so on and so forth through the course of the winter. And 90% of us lived like that, and 10% lived in the urban pen. Well, now we have 90% in the urban pen and 10% on the land, and the land cries out for people. And so our opportunities and our political systems changed. And I'm not personally satisfied in the direction of this nation. And I'd like to start the garden party. Now, to qualify to be a member of the garden party, you have to grow a garden and be responsible for yourself. You can't feed yourself entirely, but you got to do something. I don't care. You living in a condo pigeonhole shack someplace where you can grow a basil plant or a thyme plant on your windowsill. And that leads you to buying less. As we buy less from the existent system, we strengthen ourselves and our neighborhoods. You have to become nutritionally responsible for yourself and grow the best. As I've been trying to talk to you all and answering all your questions, get that biology out there. Get that mineral nutrients out there. Use those sheet compost systems and overcome that the man-generated compaction of the soils. Grow diversity and to completeness. And then you've got to harvest this life with a certain honor and grace, like a rabbit. You know, you go out, we don't use too many rabbits, but rabbits are very good, quick. During the Depression, there were rabbits in Manhattan all over. Rabbits are very quick breeding, very quick cycle. For maybe some of you are offended because they're a meat animal, but they're beautiful, quick growing, high energy conversion, and superb pelletized manure that can be composted and digested readily. And the chicken as well, as small animals. And pick your carrots, for God's sake, with some sense of honor, and harvest your rabbits or whatever it is. I grow goats and rabbits and chickens and sheep and cows, and we harvest them with honor. And then prepare it for yourself. Enough of this fast food business. Go out and prepare your own food and serve it with grace. Serve it with honor. Share this local wealth. Spend $2 a day buying neighborhood, local foods. That $2 a day, there's 500,000 of us in the county. That if we spend on an average, all of us, some more, some less, $2 a day, that's not too much money. We'd probably spend it at any rate. That'd be $1 million a day. A good little farm, family farm, 5-acre farm, a couple of kids, a couple of parents, $100,000 gross, you can make it work. You're not going to get rich, but you're going to raise your kids in a beautiful environment and out in nature, and you're going to be responsible for bringing the fullness of nutrition as possible into their little bellies and minds. And $2 a day, then we had $1 million a day, or 10 little $100,000 a year family farms, and each day, and that would give us 3,650 little individual locally supported family operations of every size. Some would be very small, some would be bigger, it doesn't make any difference. It's you and your land and opportunity and capacities. And do we have 3,600 farms here in Sonoma County producing food stocks, diversified real table food stocks? Hardly. There's so much opportunity. We spend $2 billion a year in imported food stock approximately, and I'm only talking about $360 million worth of it. And we can be independent, and we can be strong, and we can grow from there. We really take care of our land and take care of ourselves, and that's the foundation of what's responsible for grow our children up. You do that, and you can sign up and become a member of the Garden Party. And then in our foreign policy, it is going to be similar. Instead of going over the last 15 years or so, with trillions of international dollars have been used to attempt to manage the cultures of the Middle East. And in the Middle East, we have vast deserts that used to be rainforests not so long ago. And you could take those trillions of dollars and all of that resource of the airplanes and the boats and all. The Sahara could be well on its way to being a meadow. And you're worried about climate change or global warming or anything? Well, heal the scars that we've generated on this planet rather than expand them. That's the beginning salvo of foreign policy for a member of the Garden Party. Thank you for your attendance.
That was Bob Canar, a working farmer based in Sonoma County, California, who grows some of the most exquisite vegetables while at the same time growing soil that gets richer in nutrients and minerals every year. Greenstring Farm in Petaluma is one of the farms he manages, and the associated training center Greenstring Institute accepts interns year-round. Bob Canar was recorded at the first National Heirloom Seed Expo in Santa Rosa, California, on September 15, 2011. You can hear this program again on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. Look under Newest Programs. TUC Radio has moved to Northern California. This program was produced off the grid with solar power. You can get information on how to order a CD or a film on DVD of Bob Canar by calling 1-707-463-2654. And I will repeat that number in a moment. TUC Radio is free to all radio stations and depends on the support of listeners like you. Your donation, CD or DVD order, keeps this program on the air. Call anytime at 707-463-2654 for information on how to order. You can get your CD or DVD by mail or credit card by phone, or online on TUC Radio's secure website, tucradio.org.
My name is Maria Gilardin. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.